with a high of 42 degrees. We are currently at about 33 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. News time is 12:30. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Bright sunny day. It's a little chilly. In fact, just checked the temperature, 33. We may climb another notch or two, but that's going to be about it. Big come down from yesterday. Yesterday, we were in the 50s. It was a strange day, though, yesterday, wasn't it? With that fog. Most of the day. I mean, you know, you have fog in the morning. Okay. But all day long. In fact, the heaviest fog that I saw was around noontime or 1 o'clock yesterday. That's very strange. But that means it was warm. And, of course, we have the snow cover still. Much of the snow is now beginning to melt away. But it was still there covering pretty much everything yesterday. And then we had the warm temperatures and those are the conditions that give you the strange fog. I mean, it was pea soup in some places. I was up around the Clearview Mall yesterday early afternoon, and I mean, you couldn't see a hand in front of your face. It was that thick. Very strange. Then, of course, this morning we had the unexpectedly heavy snow across the southern tier of Butler County and further south, whereas here in Butler we did not see a single flurry. Not even a snowflake. We're not complaining about that, by the way. It's very strange. I'd watched the weather on TV last night, and the weather folks said there might be a touch of snow moving through, but they said it wouldn't amount to anything. Wow. I missed that one. A couple of inches, a little more in some spots. But then there was that dividing line, and unless you were in the southern tier of Butler County, you really didn't even see any. Very strange. Open talk on the first portion of the program today. Phone number is 283-2525. We'll talk with guests later. It's Valentine's week. Valentine's Day, day after tomorrow, Wednesday. We'll talk about finding a partner. Most people would prefer to have someone to share their life with, right? Right? We'll talk with the woman who has written a book about finding your soulmate, seeking soulmate. And it's pretty good. I got a review copy before being able to actually talk with Shamin Ajan. She'll be with us a little bit later on the program today. So that ought to be fun. Good time of the year to talk about that, I think. Valentine's Day. And then our final guest on the program today will be a pretty well-known guy. It's Dr. Andrew Weil, MD. You've probably seen him on TV, especially on PBS. He's had specials on TBS for a long time. This is the gentleman who has the white beard, the big, big, full white beard. No hair on top of his head, but a big full white beard. Andrew Weil, Dr. Andrew Weil, will join us for a few minutes later on the program today. So, good stuff to look forward to. Open talk right now, 283-2525 is our number. So what did you do over the weekend? Anybody watching the Olympics? I've talked with a few people who have been watching. But I've talked with a lot of people who say, what? The Olympics? Who cares? And I'm in that category, by the way. I think the Olympics are overblown. You spend way too much money for these, especially the Winter Games, these totally obscure sports. Team speed skating, snowboarding, luge. Really? Yeah? Really? Does it matter to you who wins the women's singles luge competition? Or the four-man bobsled? Or the biathlon? What's that anyway? They're just obscure sports. And hey, look, if you want to get together and determine the champions, it's generally speaking countries where there's colder weather, obviously, where they can ski much of the time or do whatever they do. But how many countries have bobsled runs? Or alpine ski jumps? That's the one that really amazes me. Alpine ski jumping, where they come down those long hills that they build, those ramps, and these guys take off, and they land. It just seems like it's a ridiculous waste of money to me, and money, it's wasting it, too. South Korea spent $13 billion to get ready for these games. They built a stadium that cost $100 million. They're going to use it four times, and then they're going to tear it down. I mean, that's just a waste to me. I don't know. Okay, open talk, 283-2525, the number, 283-2525. Let's get to the people here on this Monday. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. Good to have you back. And I know you've been back a couple of weeks now, but you were well missed by your many devoted listeners, and I'm just glad that you're back in the saddle and riding strong. So welcome back.
Thanks for your sentiments. I appreciate that. Good to be back, too, by the way.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. I'll bet it is. Regarding the Olympic Games, the Winter Olympic Games, it's hard for me to get very enthused about them. I think the time difference, maybe not seeing them live. I might be interested in a little bit of hockey. I really can't get too excited about them. But you did mention two things that I had a little bit of a first-hand brush with, which was ski jumping and bobsled. Back in May, my wife and I were out in Utah, and we went to Park City, where the Olympic Games were held a few cycles back.
Mm-hmm.
And there is in Park City a couple of ski jumps actually, and there's a bobsled run, and we saw it in the summertime, and it's fascinating to see first regarding the ski jumps that the jumpers don't really go very high in the air. They give you that illusion with camera angles, but when they take off from that the end of the jump, I mean, the jump, the hill is big, it's a big hill. I would never do it, but when they take off from the end of the jump, they kind of just go out over a hillside that is just a continuation of the ramp. So while it's still rather dangerous and risky, they're not flying very high in the air, which is, again, just an illusion created by the camera. It is a fascinating sport sometimes to watch, and you can't ever forget the thrill of victory, agony of defeat, guys. Remember that?
Oh,
Eddie
my.
The Eagle.
Wide world of sports, yeah.
yeah. Eddie. But anyway, that was interesting to see up close. And then to see an actual bobsled run up close and see how it's spread out and the way it tracks down the hillside. You know, it goes back and forth. It was just fascinating to see that up close and personal, and to see it in the summertime when it wasn't obscured by snow and whatever else. I mean, they never really show it very well on TV. But unless you're very nationalistic or you have some specific interest in a particular sport, it's kind of hard to get excited. I mean, I'm not interested in ice skating and... I appreciate the athleticism of biathlon. There's endurance type sports, but for the most part, I'm not really thrilled by it.
Well, the ratings, by the way, the TV ratings are down so far, although there are millions of people still watching it. My goodness, NBC has hyped it to the nth degree, and that's because they, of course, have in advance paid millions and millions of dollars in TV rights. In fact, I think NBC has locked up the Olympics for several years down the road, too. They might be regretting that decision if the popularity is falling off. But It's just the money. Have you seen what Rio looks like, where they held the summer games just a couple of years ago?
I have not, but
swimming pools abandoned, filled with stagnant green water. The stadium is falling apart. This thing in South Korea, and I haven't watched it because I'm just not interested, but they built a stadium there for $100 million, and they're going to tear it down as soon as the games are over, and they're going to use it four times. Opening ceremonies, closing ceremonies, and something else, but my goodness, what a waste of money that is, huh?
It sure is. Well, you know, another thing that kind of takes away from my interest in the games is the fact that it seems like the both winter and summer games have become sensitive to and react to whatever the popular kind of sport is at the moment. So they started out with snowboarding, and they've added all those kind of X Games type sporting events to it. And, you know, to an old-timer like me, I'm going, wait a minute, the X Games, if it's in the X Games, it's not a sport. It's some kind of a crazy, kind of a stunt competition or something.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. but that's our generation, Dave. We, maybe adding those kind of sports will attract the younger viewers to the event.
Well, my reaction would be, why? I mean, I just think the money can be better spent. $13 billion is there going to be the total price tag for South Korea. $13 billion. Ask Rio if they're happy they got the games 2 years ago, with their stadium crumbling and their swimming pools crumbling. And it just boggles my mind. In today's day and age, with the poverty and the hunger that we have all over the world, it just seems almost morally insane to spend that kind of money on something that's going to last 2 weeks and then it's gone, until they start hyping the next game. So,
well, I'll leave you with the last thing. My brother always says this. He said, well, the Olympics aren't that big a deal. Every year they have world championships for all these sports anyway. So, you compete not as part of a national team, but as an individual representing your nation in world championships for basically all those sports that you're seeing there anyway. So, I mean, they do it every year. Just once they call it the Olympics, why not every four?
Right. Appreciate the call, my friend.
Good talking to you. Again, great to have you back, Dave. Bye.
Same. Thanks much. Thanks a lot. So I don't watch, so what am I complaining about? It really doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm not interested in watching it, so I don't, and what's the big deal? It's just a waste of money. It could be, I mean, if you're going to spend it, there are a lot better things you could spend it on than that. Yeah. The only good thing to come out of this Olympics is apparently a thaw in the relationship between North and South Korea, but who knows how long that's going to last. I mean, with the craziness that we hear over there, especially from the North Korean leader, the guy changes colors like a chameleon, so who knows what the talk is going to be next week. I guess he sent his sister to South Korea for the game. It would be nice to see these countries reunited. They were artificially split during the end of the Korean conflict. Never officially declared a war, by the way, by the United States Congress. Ask any veteran who fought in Korea whether it was a war. Yeah, I think so, too. But that ended in what, 52, 53? And they've been split in two different Koreas ever since. Open talk at 283-2525, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Nice to talk to you, Rob. We lived in the Atlanta region. I agree with a lot of what you're saying about the Olympic venues. However, from my experience, we lived in the Atlanta region for 20 years, and we, of course, were there. I know we went down in 97, so we were just after the 96 Olympics. Mm-hmm. Olympics. However, the one thing I can say, the venues in Atlanta especially there's a swimming area. I think it's over just above Stockbridge. It's used to this day each year, and also the equine events. It's a beautiful park, and of course it's called the International Horse Park.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that are horsemen today, it's like a country club for them. I mean, it's a beautiful facility. It's first class all the way, and we would go there several times a year for different events. They hold different special events there. You can go up and watch different equine events, horse races, barrel racing and whatever, in an arena there that they hold, you know, to this day. Also, there's a big cherry blossom festival there.
Well, I can see how that would be a continuing event. And you can point to places like Los Angeles, which also hosted his summer games. I think first time in 1936. They did it again more recently, and they're scheduled to do it again, 10 years down the road. They still have the stadium that they built, and it's been used for football. It was even used for Major League Baseball for a while when the Dodgers first moved out to Los Angeles from Brooklyn. But anymore, that's the exception. Anymore, these facilities are crumbling. And then one of the biggest expenses of all now is terrorism protection.
Oh, yeah.
Ever since Munich. But even the games you were talking about in Atlanta, there was a homegrown terrorist. Remember that? Set off an explosive device.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so he got thousands of police around and the guys with the Tommy guns and everything, and I don't know. It just seems like it may be past its time right now.
But I do believe that you're right about the excessive costs in certain areas around the world that have not been reused or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or they get tore down like this one you speak of over in Korea. But maybe they could consider... like in the United States, having one venue and reusing it.
Yeah.
When it's here, and maybe one in Europe and reusing it.
I could buy that. In fact, I think one of our earlier callers mentioned Park City, Utah. I think the Winter Games are coming back there in about 10 years or so. But otherwise, And like I say, I don't watch them anyway, so what does it matter to me? It's just what I think is an obscene waste of money, overspending.
Well, no, I don't believe that anybody watches all of them. They only watch events that they have a particular interest in, whether it be, I think a lot of people watch the figure skating,
mm-hmm.
they watch that ski jumping, and whatever. But there's a lot of events that I don't think too many people watch the, I know it was on yesterday or last evening, the cross-country skiing.
Yes, I think there was curling on yesterday, too. Boy, that can put you to sleep faster than watching paint dry. That.
There you go. I don't think too many people are on the edge of the seat to watch that. Yeah,
that's for sure. Hey, listen, thanks, my friend. It was great to talk to you today. Thanks for joining us on the program. I appreciate it.
Okay, have a good one, Dave.
And you. Bye-bye. 283-2525, open talk. Let's shift over to this line next. Hi, caller. Thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to talk to
good.
You.
Yeah, I was just listening to some of that, comments on there, and you were saying about the stadiums. Isn't it amazing, though, when they show, like, the opening ceremonies and all that stuff? I mean, there's thousands of people there. Where do they come from? Is there people lining up to buy tickets to the Olympics to fly to Korea? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Where do all these people, where do they come from? Is it the families, I guess? Or?
Well, locally, okay, but to me it's like the Super Bowl. Who can afford to go to the Super Bowl? The tickets are thousands of dollars.
Yeah, $3,000 or $5,000. What are they at the,
You know all the hotel the fees are jacked up, and to fly to Korea, my gosh, that's halfway around the world. Who could afford to do it?
I know. I don't understand it. When they show that, they show their arena, you know, and it's just thousands of people. They're like, where do they come from? Just another comment after I was listening to everything, but I agree with you on the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, thanks. All right. Thanks, my friend. Good to talk to you.
Sure. You too, boy.
I have talked with some people who watched the opening ceremonies last Friday night. And was it Friday night? They were on TV? Friday? I don't know. But the other thing was they had already happened. You know, they took place like 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning with the time difference because Korea is pretty close to half a day ahead of us on the other side of the international dateline. So you're watching something that had taken place 12 hours before. I don't know whether there's any live coverage of this games. I haven't really paid attention. But there can't be too much with the incredible time difference. I don't know. Open Talk 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525, here on the It's Your Turn program for today. This Monday, the 12th of February. Valentine's Day is the day after tomorrow. Is that a big day for you? I kind of like Valentine's Day. I don't see anything wrong with it. It's a tradition that goes back, centuries. Although there is some dispute, concern over the fact that, St. Valentine may have been an amalgam of several characters, several men of good works back in the day. There's all kind of legends and tales that have sprung up about St. Valentine. Why is it on February 14th? I don't know. I have to look that up before we get there in a day or so. But the traditions that have surrounded it, regardless of the origins, what's wrong with, sending your sweetheart a card or a gift or something, or getting one from someone you love? I think it's kind of nice, you know. And I'm sure everyone remembers being in elementary school, first, second, or third grade, and, did the Valentine's boxes, right? Back and forth. Yeah. I suppose they still do that. I'm not sure. They had your shoebox, and it got a little hole in the top and made it into a mailbox, and, everybody went around and put Valentine's in everybody else's mailbox. Hey, it's about a month to go until spring. It's a good time of the year to have a little fun. Plus, they had Valentine's Day parties, too, right? In school, right? I don't know whether they still have those parties or not, with all of the concerns these days about food safety and food allergy and all that sort of thing. My goodness, I'm glad I grew up in a day when we didn't have to worry about that. Didn't have to worry about somebody bringing in adulterated cupcakes or something like that. Yeah. Phone number is 283-2525. We're going to be talking about finding a soulmate later on the program today with guest Shimin Ajan. Dating today, I don't know. Kind of glad I'm not in the dating time of my life anymore. And some things I want to ask her about some of these modern-day online dating things. I know they're very popular. I know personally of one couple who met through online dating. They're now married and have a baby girl, so worked out well for them. But, boy, I don't know. Anybody out there who has used online dating? It just seems so superficial, you know. Is Tinder, is that the one where you just swipe? I don't know. Somebody's picture pops up and you swipe one way or another. I've never used it, so I don't know. But, I mean, you talk about, you want to get to know someone simply on a photograph, on the basis of a photograph? Yeah? My goodness. a lot more to the people than just first impressions. Now I realize that when you're meeting someone in person, that's part of it. You know, you might initially be attracted to someone by their looks, but it certainly goes beyond that. I mean, you talk to them, you slowly learn about the other person. Courtship, right? And if it leads to something, that's fine. If it doesn't, that's fine too. I don't know. Maybe it's a generational thing. I know younger generations do this all the time, online dating. You just got to be careful, though. Got to be careful because a lot of folks are using that to, to fool people, quite frankly. They don't put a lot of true information on there. And who knows, it's really a picture of somebody. You know, anybody can post a name and put a fake picture up there. Right? That's something you can't do in real life. Well, we'll talk about that, among other things, with Shimin Ajan later on the program today. But don't forget, for your sweetheart, a card, small gift at least, for, you know, something nice. It doesn't have to be tremendously expensive. It's the gesture, after all, right? It's the gesture. Yeah. I was talking earlier today with my colleague Kate in the morning, Coffee with Kate, about sentimental romantic movies. And I suppose if I sat down and started listing some, I could come up with a list of at least five or so. But the one that always pops into my mind, first of all, is Love Story. Ryan O'Neill, Ally McGraw. Pat Parker's looking at me through the glass. He's engineering the program in the other studio. You're too young for a Love Story, right? Did you ever see it? Never? Yeah. Came out about, I think it was 1969, 1970, somewhere around in there. And it was adapted from a book, and it took the country by storm, I want to tell you. By storm. And yes, it was a mushy flick, and a lot of people make fun of it. And why? What do you expect in a movie called Love Story? Expect to see car wrecks and buildings being blown up and people blowing people's heads off, like as so many movies these days? Of course not. It's Love Story. Of course it's going to be mushy, right? Yeah. Tell you another good one, goes way, way back. Shop Around the Corner. Jimmy Stewart and, what was the name of the... Sullivan. It's not Marino Sullivan, though. It's somebody else who played the female lead. And this movie was probably made about 1940. I've seen it two or three times on Turner Classic Movies. And, yeah, kind of mushy and romantic, but it's a great little flick. Yeah. Great little flick. Shop Around the Corner. And it was used partially as the basis for a more recent movie. I guess now it goes back 15, 20 years. You've Got Mail. Do you remember that one with Tom Hanks and... what's her name? Tom Hanks and... you know who I'm talking about. that was a partial remake of Little Shop Around the Corner. Because if you'll recall, Tom Hanks was the owner of a big corporate bookstore, Big Jane, and he was going to wipe out the small independent bookstore, which was called Shop Around the Corner. Yeah, that's where they got the name of that shop from the other movie. That was a good movie, right? Quickly seems a little bit dated because of the You've Got Mail title, which is long gone now. I think that was AOL, America Online. Although I there are still people on my email list who are, that's their internet service provider, AOL. obviously not nearly as popular as it once was, but makes it seem a little bit dated. Meg Ryan. Suddenly it comes to me. Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. And that was back before Meg Ryan got weird. She just all of a sudden went weirdo. And I don't know. I haven't enjoyed too many of her movies since then. She hasn't made too many since then, as a matter of fact. When was that made, by the way? 1998. So it is almost 20 years ago. Wow. Time flies. Speaking of which, we've hit the 1 o'clock hour. In fact, we're a minute past 1 o'clock right now. It's Open Talk at 283-2525, 283-2525. Let's get back to the people here. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. Do you remember the... just a minute, I'm going to turn this radio down. The Great Flood?
The Great Flood?
Yeah.
You mean...
back in biblical times?
Oh, you mean Noah?
Yeah, Noah. When Noah had to build the ark.
Noah and the ark. Well, yeah, I know that story.
Do you know why that came about?
Why?
God wasn't happy with man. He figured he was total disaster in creating man, and that's why he killed everybody except Noah, which he was a follower. And it has a very interesting, way it come about. Can you imagine what he'd be like today?
There's a lot of violence in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Armies slaughtering thousands and so on and so forth.
I don't know when the time value come in on that, though. That could have been even after the flood, too.
Well, yeah, some of the numbers in the Old Testament, so-and-so lived to be 800 years old, and, obviously
yeah.
That's not the case, so...
You ought to research that and have a program on it sometime.
Well, Noah and the Flood. Yeah. Well, I think most people are familiar with the story, though, right? There have been lots of movies about it. In fact, there was just a movie a couple of years ago with the... Who's the tough guy? Russell Crowe, right? Played Noah?
Do you think it's possible what he did?
What do you mean?
Built the ark and saved one of each animal?
No. I don't take the story literally. Do you?
Yeah, they were saying how many stories aren't really true.
I don't know. The Bible is a library of books of different type. There's there's wisdom, there's poetry, there's song.
Everybody has their own theory.
Well, I'm not sure about that. It's just that there are all different kinds of literature in the Bible. It's not history as we would write history today.
It's very interesting, I'll say that. Thank you very much, Dave.
Thanks, my friend. Thanks a lot. We need to take a break, don't we? I guess we do. Wow. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525, Open Talk on the It's Your Turn program today. We will be back right after these words.
Shipping things yourself can be extremely complex. You buy the box, you make sure it's secure, and then you got to tape it, then lug it into the car, to the post office. Ugh. Make life easier. Take it to Goin Postal. In between Villa Grande and Kings on Newcastle Road, Goin Postal takes care of all of that for you. And hey, they've got Valentine's Day cards as well, local honey, and lottery tickets. It's just a downright good place to go. Goin Postal, 140 Shockey Lane in Butler, if you got to plug it into the GPS, your friendly neighborhood shipping store.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? When a tornado is tearing through town? Or a hurricane strikes? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. And it's not always as simple as using your cell phone. That's why now is the time to take action. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Lots of sunshine, a little chilly, but boy, the sun's nice, especially after yesterday. Yeah, 283-2525 is our number. It's open talk. Let's get back to the people here quickly. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
Hey, I was talking to you really last week about the Equifax thing and how they declined to look into that, the Consumer Protection Agency.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here the guy that's in charge of his name escapes me right now. He was quoted before he's head of the agency that he wanted to do away with the agency. So here Trump put him in charge of the agency. So here they had a case that they had a lender that was charging 200% interest, and they spent 2 years investigating this company, and today they said that they're going to drop the case. 200% interest.
Unbelievable, huh?
It's basically criminal. And then one guy said that his mom took out a loan because she needed money, and she's elderly, and she didn't understand what she was getting into, so he called the company up, and the guy was like, he said it was like a bad gangster movie. Every other word was a swear word, and he didn't care, and he'd come and get me. And it's insane that somebody wants to demolish an agency, you put them in charge of it. So,
Well, there have been, at least in the minds of a lot of people, some very questionable cabinet secretary picks by President Trump, you know.
Yeah, the EPA, pretty much all.
EPA is another one. The Department of Education is another one.
Betsy DeVos, yeah, wants to privatize school.
Yeah.
And she has a lot of money invested in that, too, because her company would sell the testing and the textbooks and things like that. So.
And the guy that was put in charge of the EPA actually sued the EPA several times while he was, governor
Texas,
of Texas,
I believe he was.
Oklahoma, Texas, somewhere down in there.
Yeah, he sued him a bunch of times.
Rather
so,
bizarre.
I mean, when people say, hey, let's give this guy a chance, what for? I mean, it's just not him. It's who he's putting in charge of all these regulatory agencies, which are, good for. I mean, I like clean air. I like good water. I like public education.
Mm-hmm.
And just to do away with a lot of things I think are actually beneficial to the country, I don't understand how that's going to make us great again.
Well, there are a lot of supporters of Donald Trump, especially here in western Pennsylvania, especially here in Butler County, which went solidly for Trump in the election a couple of years ago.
Well, the strange thing is, the woman that took out this $800 loan, she had to pay $3,000, and she thought she was done, and they kept taking money out of her checking account. And I feel like an idiot because I voted for Donald Trump. So there's a classic story right there.
Well, we'll see how, there might be an indication of how it's going to shake down when we have the midterm elections this fall. Because members of Congress are up for election, and a bunch of other offices, too. So we'll see what happens.
A good note for democracy, at least this gerrymandering thing in Pennsylvania, it seems like that's moving along in a good direction.
I still think there's a little bit to go on that, though.
They released the map today, I saw.
Yeah, I saw it, too. And there's some interesting things in there.
Yeah,
of course,
this was a
new map put together by the Republicans. This doesn't affect our immediate area, but there's a race for Congress in the Pittsburgh area to replace Tim Murphy, the guy who resigned in disgrace last year after a sex scandal. And there's a Republican running, Rick Saccone, and there's a Democrat, Lamb.
Lamb.
I can't think of his first name.
Connor
right
Lamb.
Connor Lamb, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in case you didn't notice, the newly designed map by Republican leaders, Connor Lamb lives in Mount Lebanon, he wouldn't even be in that district anymore.
Oh, really?
Conveniently moved him out. And he's said to be catching up to Rick Saccone. And there have been a ton of money from the National Republican Committee coming into this area for TV ads for Sakon. They're all over the place.
Oh, it's crazy. I'm not sure what the amount is, but, I mean, you cannot watch TV for more than one commercial block without seeing an ad,
yeah,
it seems like.
Yeah.
And it's weird because that's just one district.
So how about, here's a new map. Oh, I'm sorry. Connor Lamb is no longer in that district. My goodness, what a coincidence. Well, we'll just move on. So
well, that's interesting, too, because both those guys are veterans. So,
yeah.
You know, that whole thing playing off, like, who's an American, who's not American, who's patriot, you know, it's...
Unbelievable. I get insulted, but, again, I don't live there, so... Yeah. But I get insulted by some of this. You know, what do you think we are, idiots?
Right.
You know, give us a little bit of credit.
And unfortunately, the guy's name's Lamb, and they use that a lot against him.
I think it's, what do I know? But I think it's going to end up that the Supreme Court is actually going to redraw the map, because I don't see Governor Wolf or the Democrats going for this new one. So we'll see how it shakes down.
All right, Dave. Hey, good talking to you, man.
Sure, thanks. By the way, there will be... probably at least a slight change in the 3rd Congressional District, which most of our listeners fall into. That's the district held by Congressman Mike Kelly, Butler native, of course. The last time the Republicans redrew the boundary lines, they split Erie County. So that only part of it is in Congressman Kelly's district. That's probably going to change. Probably going to go back to taking all of Erie County, but we'll see. I mean, we don't really know until the final map is drawn. Is it confusing? Yes. So don't worry if, you know, you're not quite able to follow it yet until they get the final map. You know, then we'll worry about it. Then we'll talk about who's where and who's who. Yeah. Well, coming up, we've got more open talk coming later in the week, but we have guests, a lot of guests tomorrow. Stan Kosciuszko will be with us tomorrow, president of the Butler County Chamber of Commerce. And we're scheduled to talk tomorrow. Did you know there's a bicycle museum in Pittsburgh? No, I didn't either. We're scheduled to talk with Craig Morrow, world's largest bicycle museum, Pittsburgh area tomorrow. We have some other stuff for you as well. Right now we have to take a break because our first guest is going to be joining us in just a minute or so, and we're going to be talking about the dating game in this day and age. Well, that's a good thing to talk about here in Valentine's Week, right? Shamin Ajan will be joining us. And then still later on the program, our final guest today, a well-known guy, Andrew Weil, Dr. Andrew Weil, MD. You've seen him on TV, I'm sure. Most likely on Channel 13. I've seen him on there, man, for years and years. He's the guy with the big white beard. No hair on top of his head, but big fluffy white beard. That's him, Andrew Weil, yeah. He'll be talking about his latest book, Mind Over Meds. And that'll be coming up a little bit later on the program today. So still much more to come. Stick with us, if you will. We'll be back to talk about the dating game and how it's changed over the past several years. That's next here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
If you're thinking about buying a car, truck, or SUV, or even if you just bought one, make sure you check out the great rates at Armco Credit Union. Through February 28th, you can get a 36-month loan on new and used vehicles for as low as 1.24 APR. We'll even refinance your loan from another financial institution. It's never been easier to join, so call today or visit armcocu.com for membership and rate information. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Well, listeners, it's that time of the year. Valentine's Day comes around the middle of February every year, and we like to talk a little bit about romance and dating and so on and so forth, and we have a good program lined up for you today with guest Shamin Ajan, who is the author of a book called Seeking Soulmate, Ditch the Dating Game and Find Real Connection. First of all, Shamin, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
The dating game has been around for a long time, hasn't it? Centuries,
oh, yes.
Millennia,
oh, yes.
As a matter of fact, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Since Adam and Eve.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that would go back to the very, very beginning. You know, everybody is looking for love. For some people, it's a struggle. For some people, it's been a struggle for a long, 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 long time.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the fresh approach about your book? What makes it different from some of the other things we've heard about and read about?
Well, I think what makes my book a little bit different is it's about looking within and figuring out maybe how your own perceptions and your own past experiences and your own negative thoughts about dating might be impacting your mm-hmm. current situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is about learning to become more mindful of what it is that's happening on these dates, what's happening before these dates, and what's happening after these dates, and how that all is impacting the experiences that you're having.
A little bit, listeners, about our guest, so that you know that she's pretty knowledgeable about what she speaks. Shamin Ajan is a licensed clinical social worker. She's been in private practice for about 15 years now, and she has blogged extensively about that concept that she just mentioned, mindful dating, and developing a mindful dating model that she uses in her practice. Well, I suppose we better start with defining our terms right there, Shamin. What do you mean by mindful dating? What's that all about?
Okay, so why don't we start first by talking about what mindfulness is.
Okay.
Mindfulness is defined as a particular way of paying attention and doing so in a way that is focused and on purpose and non-judgmental. And so what that means is you are learning to be in the here and the now instead of being stuck in the past or focused on the future. And you're cultivating awareness of what's happening in the here and the now. Now that can be sensory, you know, what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what you're smelling, what mm-hmm. you're tasting, what mm-hmm. you're touching.
Yeah.
It can be your thoughts. It can be your feelings. It can be your behaviors, or it can be, you know, what you're observing happening in an exchange with somebody. So that's mindfulness. And then mindful dating is bringing that awareness of those thoughts and feelings and behaviors and the principles of mindfulness to your romantic encounters. And you're using those skills that you develop through a mindfulness practice to remain present on a date and to remain open to whatever comes up for you on that date and open to a potential partner. And so mindful dating can really be an effective way of getting in tune with yourself, with your true self, and that makes it easier for you to make a genuine connection with somebody.
There's one other term that I'd like to talk about before we get too much further into the subject. You have also used in your practice to help those people with dating troubles, help them to turn their luck around. You have used cognitive behavior therapy. Is that similar to mindfulness, or explain that to those of us who haven't studied much psychology? What do you mean by cognitive behavior therapy?
So cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, is different than mindfulness, but the two marry well together. They make a perfect couple. And when I talk about CBT, what I'm really talking about is an understanding of the way your thoughts affect the way you feel, the way your feelings affect the way you behave, the way your behaviors affect the way you think, and vice versa. They're all interconnected. And so CBT is really about learning how to identify those thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And once you're able to do that, you can then learn how to intervene on each one of those levels. So if you're having a ton of negative thoughts about dating, you have an opportunity then to say, okay, are these thoughts valid? Are they partially true? Are they completely untrue? Instead of doing what most of us do, having automatic thoughts that pop into our mind and then treating them as if they're facts and then being reactive to them.
You have helped a lot of people with dating issues at your practice. How did you come to focus in this area? Was that something that happened kind of accidentally, or were you...
Yeah, it did happen accidentally. I didn't go into psychotherapy thinking, oh, I really want to work with dating singles. I had a supervisor once tell me that you get the clients that you need, and I just happened to be getting a lot of single 20-something, 30-something, 40-something people coming into my practice who weren't necessarily looking for help with dating, but if you're single and you're in therapy, inevitably dating is going to come up, and it came up over and over and over again with each one of these clients, and I started to notice that dating is a real issue for people. It's one of the most difficult interactions to have because there's so much in it. There, you know, there's rejection that's built into it. There's, you know, self-esteem issues that come out. There's anxieties that are present. You know, it really is a unique situation that everybody at some point has to deal with. And so, yes, it can be a real struggle for people. And as a result, I just figured out a way to use my skills and, you know, the training that I've had to tailor it towards these dating singles and come up with a way for them to be able to do it more effectively.
For listeners who are joining us a little bit late, perhaps on this segment of It's Your Turn, that's fine. We're speaking with Shamin Ajan about her book, Seeking Soulmate, Ditch the Dating Game and Find Real Connection. I read Shamin, and I've seen this in several wire stories and magazine articles and so on, that, you know, we tended to think of dating and dating issues as something that affected young people, especially 20s, 30s. I'm reading that that's not the same anymore. Because of our changing demographics and so on, there are now a lot of seniors, people in their 50s, 60s, even older, who find themselves single and alone, and they'd like to get into dating, but they feel like, you know, the way they did it was 500 years ago. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, the dating has changed dramatically, especially in the past 10, 15 years with dating apps and online dating and all of that stuff. So it has changed a lot of ways, but the fundamentals of dating remain the same. And you're right. You know, if you talk to people who work in nursing homes, you'll find one of the biggest issues that they deal with is people sneaking into each other's rooms. So, yes, no matter how old you are, you still want to connect. You still want to, you know, have that intimacy with another person and really feel that connection with somebody else.
So your book really could be aimed at anyone of any age. What about men and women? Do more women read about this than men?
I think more women do read about dating than men, but I wrote this book from the perspective of your girlfriend who just happens to be a psychotherapist or a sex therapist, but the principles are the same for everybody, and I really did try to include a little bit of something for everybody, no matter if you're male, female, LGBT, if you're interfaith dating, interracial dating, dating across class lines, if you're divorced or a single parent. I really tried to touch a bit on each one of these unique situations. Of course, I wasn't able to touch on everyone, but the principles, I think, are transferable no matter who you are.
You have, I've jotted down some notes. I've got a review copy of your book in front of me here. As I was perusing it earlier, I jotted down a couple of notes. You have a listing of what you call the top 10 dating myths.
I
don't have time to talk about all of them, but I thought I'd pick out a couple to mention that our listeners might find interesting. For one, you say this is one of the top dating myths. Men are more likely than women to approach someone they are interested in. That's a myth, you say, huh?
Oh, yeah. I think times have changed. I think that's, you know, an old, antiquated 50s idea, 1950s idea. Women are now more empowered. Women now feel like they have the ability to go out and approach somebody. And I think with online dating, that has been a huge change because, you know, you're swiping and you're liking and you are part of that process by identifying somebody that you're interested in. And that's happening whether you're male or you're female.
Here's another myth that you talk about. Sparks will fly immediately if there is something there. You say that's just not true.
Oh, no. I think that's one of the biggest issues that people have. There are many reasons that sparks might not fly. Someone might be nervous. You might not have an opportunity to really kind of be your true self for whatever reason in that first date. And if there is something there, I always think that it's important to give it another chance because that first date is awkward. It's awkward for everybody. And so, yeah, give it a little bit of time. Unless, you know, you're completely turned off by the person and you know it's just not going to work, then, you know, give it a date a chance. If there is some kind of connection, if you see that there's something there, then, you know, there's always an opportunity to see if there will be sparks in the future. And you've seen that happen in relationships where the sparks die out and then they are present again. And so if that can happen, it can happen also with somebody that you're just meeting.
One more myth, and we have to take a break. Opposites attract. You say that's one of the top myths. It's just not true.
Well, it might be true in some cases, but it's not true in other cases. And so I don't think that it's something that we should hold on to as you know, a solid idea. Opposites attract, but often opposites then have conflicts if they're not able to, you know, really support each other and listen to each other and resolve. And so that might be true for some couples, but there's a lot of couples who I know who are so similar and really have really healthy relationships.
I would agree with you on that 100%. And I heard that since the time I was, you know, 14 or 15 years old. Opposites attract. Not in my... at least in my experience. Listen, folks, we have a few more minutes to talk with Shamin Ajan, author of Seeking Soulmate, Ditch the Dating Game and Find Real Connection. We'll pick up our conversation with her here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR right after these words. We have a change of schedule. I got my calendar mixed up somehow. Andrew Wallace later, but we will be talking on the next segment of the program after we finish up with Shamin here, with Brooks Bartlett and Helen Bartlett. They're both retired physical therapists, and they have news from a popular music series that benefits the St. Barnabas Health System. So they'll be visiting with us in a short time here today. Okay, we pick up our conversation with Shamin Ajan here on WISR right after these words.
On average, humans walk 100,000 miles during the course of their lives. So it makes sense our feet and ankles may suffer wear and tear. Doctors William Saar and Christopher Edwards of the foot and ankle team at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat numerous injuries and conditions to help get you back on your feet. Their approach to orthopedic foot and ankle care offers a wide range of conservative to surgical treatment options. To learn more, visit TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers partner with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Welcome back. It's a good time of the year to talk about romance and love and relationships and dating. And that's what we're doing today with our guest, Shamin Ajan. She is the author of a book. By the way, this is a friendly little book. It's not real long. It's about 200 pages and chock full of information. It's called Seeking Soulmate by Shamin Ajan. You have a whole section in here about online dating. I'm anxious to talk with you about that because I'm a baby boomer, so I'm of a generation that didn't, you know, there was no online dating or dating sites when I was of prime dating age. I wonder about some of these things today, you know, swiping a picture on Tinder or some of these other things. I mean, is that really a way to try to find someone to build a relationship with? It just seems so superficial to me. Is that just me, Shamin, or what's the deal there?
It's not just you, Dave. I think a lot of people are nodding their head listening to this and have some apprehensions about it also. But today, 1 in 5, 20% of committed relationships start online. It is a viable way to meet people. And if you're looking to connect with somebody, I really think you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not looking into online dating, because that's just the way of the world right now.
Huh. How do you know where to go? I mean, there's I don't keep up on them because I don't need that right now. Hopefully never will, but it seems like there must be 50 of these online dating sites. I mentioned Tinder, but there's a gazillion other ones, right?
Oh, yeah, there's probably more than 50. There are so many different ones. I think there's one for everybody, and I think, you know, there's multiple ones for everybody. And so I would do a little bit of research on online and pick the one that speaks to you. There's, you know, ones for farmers. There's ones for people who are looking for just people of their own faith or their own ethnic background. Mm-hmm. There are ones that are, you know, more geared on personality testing. And there are the more popular ones like Match and Tinder, like you discussed. And then there's ones that are more experiential. You know, I'd like to go do this thing. Is there anybody who is interested in bowling? And you connect on that level. So there are so many different options and so many different ways for you to approach it.
I got to ask you about something else, and I have never watched either The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. I know of these programs because if you're watching TV, you can't miss the promos, you know, the advertisements for them. Coming next Tuesday on The Bachelor. And I see this, and, you know, they got the rose thing. And I shake my head. Obviously, they're popular. They're still on. What do you think about this?
Yeah.
Is this any way to go about starting a relationship or getting a date, or is this just junky reality shows?
I think it's probably mostly junky reality shows, but there have been some successful relationships that have come out of it. I think most are not successful. I think the popularity of these shows have less to do with it being like a real way of finding love and more to do with kind of a voyeuristic quality that we all have, just kind of looking in on these experiences that these people are having that are so outlandish, that are so produced. But within this produced experience, there's truths that are happening. There are real exchanges that are happening, and we can relate to some of those real exchanges, some of that hurt, some of that rejection, some of that insecurity, you know, the real connections that are being formed, the love that seems to be happening. And that's, I think, what we all kind of connect to.
Well, let's talk about that.
All of us who are watching.
that feeling of rejection, lack of self-esteem. I can remember back in my dating days, and it was back in those days, it was almost always the guy that asked, you know, somebody out. And, I mean, you know, sometimes that took a lot of courage, you know. Yeah. You had to gird yourself and go to the telephone and say, okay, I'm going to give this a go. And there was always a fear of rejection. And then, well, no question, it would put a dent in your self-esteem if you got shot down.
Oh,
but
yeah.
So you talk about that in your book, do you?
I do. And I think, you know, that can really be hurtful to be rejected. But I think it's also part of the experience. And so if you are so afraid of the rejection that you avoid dating altogether, then you're not going to get what it is that you're looking for. You know, instead, I think it's important to look at dating and really accept that rejection is part of the process. A little bit like going on a job interview, different, but you know you're not going to necessarily get the job every time, but you have to throw your hat in the ring to see if it's possible, if it's a good match. And you know, you are creating opportunities by reaching out to people and seeing if they'd be interested in getting to know each other better. So, yes, it is really difficult to put yourself out there, but it is part of the process. And if you can learn to accept that and depersonalize it a little bit, which I know can be really hard, but depersonalize it a little bit, then you'll be more successful.
Our time runs short. I got a lot more questions. Let me ask you one more. Do men and women make the same mistakes when they're dating, or are there gender differences?
I think men and women make a lot of the same mistakes, but I do think there are some mistakes that men make more often than women. I think both men and women have issues with being on their smartphones. That is a huge issue. I observe it all the time. I'm guilty of it. My husband has to tell me to put the smartphone down often. It makes it really difficult to connect with somebody if your face is stuck on your phone, or if you're on Instagram posting your date instead of connecting with the person that you're with. And then I think people go into dates with expectations, and those expectations then turn into disappointment and resentment when it doesn't work out. So those are some of the examples of what common mistakes men and women are both making. I think, on the other hand, women tend to go into relationships or into dating thinking that, okay, this person might not be right for me, but I can change them. I think that is a more common mistake that women make. Whereas men, I think they have a tendency to be to think of women who might be beautiful or successful as out of their league and don't approach those women, and those women tend to be overlooked. And so you might be really missing out on a real connection with somebody that you assume is going to reject you.
Interesting. A lot more stuff in the book, folks. Dating fatigue, a lot of other things. Where's the book available, Shamin? Online or bookstores or both or where?
It's everywhere. You can get it online at Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Any of your local bookstores have them. And if they don't have them and you want to get it in a bookstore, just tell them to order it and they'll be there in 2 or 3 days.
Seeking Soulmate by Shamin Ajan, our guest on the program today. Thanks, Shamin. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Dave, for having me. It was a real pleasure.
All right. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Okay. So long now.
Bye.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the program today. Well, the dating game, how it has changed, huh, over the past couple of generations. Nice to talk with Shamin Jan about that. We switched to a different topic today, and that is jazz and the opportunity to hear some great jazz music here in our area. A couple of guests are with us here in the studio to talk about it. Let's say hello to them before we do anything else. Brooks Bartlett, nice to meet you, sir. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you very much, Dave. Nice to be with you.
And his wife, Helen, also here. Hi, Helen. How are you?
Fine. Thanks very much for the invitation.
Both of you have been very active in volunteering with the St. Barnabas Health System over actually many years, right?
Many years. Yeah. My time with St. Barnabas, probably 30, 40 years now. And almost goes back as far as my love for jazz.
Well, there's been a jazz series at St. Barnabas, I understand, for some time.
We're in our fourth year of doing jazz cabaret. Mm-hmm. It was my idea to recreate the old jazz clubs that used to be so prevalent all over the country, but in Pittsburgh particularly, we have such a rich jazz history.
Oh, yeah.
And there were great jazz clubs. And so I decided to go retro and have a venue that would be sans the smoke, but would be like an old jazz club with little candlelit tables and low lighting and good jazz, good romantic jazz, and upbeat jazz, and so forth. And so that was my aim, and I talked to St. Barnabas about it, and they gave us the go-ahead as long as we did all the arrangement and paying for it and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So this May will be the end of 4 years that we've been doing this.
And now you have, first of all, there's a jazz cabaret coming up later this month, and we'll give you the particulars on that, listeners, in just a moment or so. But we wanted to not only help to publicize that, but there's a change of venue, I understand, for
right.
a period at least.
We've been holding it at the Washington Place at the main campus in Gibsonia,
mm-hmm.
A room called the Mount Vernon Room. Well, they're making some changes in the Washington Place, and because of that, they're not going to have that room available anymore. And they have, they're now using Conley Resort on Route 8, and St. Barnabas now has ownership of that, so they suggested we move up there. We went up and looked over the venue, and it's beautiful, looking out over the fairways and the ponds and the backdrop of trees and so forth.
Been there many times. I'll back you up on that. Yeah.
So we thought that would be a good replacement, but thinking about that, we thought moving into Butler County, we ought to alert the folks up here who are jazz lovers or who might be interested in becoming jazz lovers in having an opportunity to hear good jazz in this particular area. I don't know how much jazz is being played in Butler County, frankly. They used to have a club someplace in downtown Butler that occasionally had jazz, and I don't remember where it was. I don't recall that, but jazz is a genre of music that is kind of interesting in that it's a little bit passé for some. Rock and roll came in, and hip-hop and so forth, so we're kind of promoting jazz and trying to keep it alive and well in the North Boroughs.
Everything old is new again, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, just in case some folks are listening in the car and they're, you know, they're pulling into the supermarket or the shopping center, let's give the particulars on the upcoming concert, then we'll talk a little bit more in general about jazz. I'm a jazz lover too, although a little bit of a story to tell there. Jazz Cabaret at Conley Resort coming up February 28th.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Wednesday.
That's a Wednesday?
Wednesday evening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 7 to 9 p.m. And who's going to be featured?
We have the lovely Donna Bailey is singing, and she's accompanied by a bassist by the name of Jason Holler and a pianist, Joe DeFazio. Both are well-known Pittsburgh jazz artists, and they backed her up. We've had her three times because she's such a popular artist.
I've heard Donna Bailey sing.
And,
she's terrific.
She is, mm-hmm. And she's such a sweetheart.
Very so, good stage presence,
yeah,
and
great
audience.
Well, she's mm-hmm. been around, and so she knows how to handle the...
You know, that's so important. Not everybody has that, even some of the great performers. One example of that is Linda Ronstadt. Now, unfortunately, she's had a lot of health problems recently,
right.
And she's retired from concert singing, but... you know, she was really, really popular back in the 70s and the 80s in a wide variety of music.
Correct, yes.
Including Hispanic music. Her father was from Mexico, I think. But pop music. And then she was one of the first pop artists to go back to some of the jazz standards.
Right.
From the 40s and 50s, she... did two or three albums, Lush Life, I remember. I still have that one on CD. Beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But she, I never saw her live in concert. I saw a couple of TV, you know, replays of her concert. She just had very little, it was hard to believe how poor her stage presence was.
That is amazing, and we've noted that. I've been going to jazz clubs and jazz concerts for years, but... it is kind of fascinating to think that someone who really makes their living in front of a microphone or a camera has not developed that ability to bond with the audience. And mm-hmm. we've seen a few like that.
Yeah. Well, even some of the, you know, Barbara Streisand was well known for being petrified to do live concerts, and she didn't for like 30 years.
Right, right.
So, well, anyway, Donna Bailey has the stage presence.
She does indeed.
Definitely.
Yeah. And
very comfortable with the audience. Mm-hmm. She really is.
She's coming from West Virginia, as I did, as an old country boy, she's also originally from West Virginia.
I knew you'd get that in there. What about tickets? First of all, this all benefits the Free Care Fund, right?
The Free Care Fund. All of the money we make on tickets goes to the Free Care Fund at St. Barnabas. So,
good cause.
We're supported by some great sponsors who happen to be friends of ours. And so we pay for the musicians, and we have free hors d'oeuvres and
free parking,
and so it's a pretty good thing for $12.50 per person, cash bar, but everything is set up, as I say, in the old jazz club setting with the individual tables of six or, well, we have different size, six or eight people, and with candle in the middle and the low lighting.
Just like we used to see in the movies, except no smoking anymore. Thank goodness for that.
Right. Well, I remember going to the old Encore in Shadyside, and you couldn't, when you came in the door, you couldn't see the back part of the bar because of smoke. And those days are gone, thank goodness.
I'm a big fan of Turner Classic Movies. I don't know whether you
watch
that
indeed.
On TV. I think it's fabulous. That's usually what I turn on first of all, to see what movie's on. But it is startling and a little disturbing to see how back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, how much smoking was done in the movies.
Oh, yes.
Because it was supposed to be cool then, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, when I was coming out of high school and going to college, I hadn't smoked. But when you got to college, you had to be Joe Cool.
Yeah.
You had to take up a pipe or cigarettes or something there.
How
wrong we were.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what about tickets? Must you get them in advance, or can you get them at the door?
Tickets at the door.
Mm-hmm. At the door?
Okay. Yes.
And cash or check.
Mm-hmm. Hey, $12.50 per person. Take your sweetheart. $25 per couple. Great evening of jazz. Mm-hmm. And you got the free appetizers,
right.
And the atmosphere, and it's very nice. I really applaud what you guys have done. I became more appreciative of jazz within the past 15, 20 years or so. When I was coming of age, jazz was Dave Brubeck.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, nothing wrong with Dave Brubeck. I was in a group that actually played a couple of his tunes. Of course, Take Five, of course, was the classic.
Right.
But,
mm-hmm.
What was the other one we did? Blue Rondo a la Turk.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes, indeed.
I liked it for the title as much as anything else.
To
Blue
be able to
Rondo
say that.
A la Turk. Yeah. But I didn't realize that. Maybe that's what jazz was considered back in those. I don't know. Lately, I've learned that jazz is, first of all, they're vocalists, not
right.
just instrumentalists. And you go back to some of the great composers, George Gershwin, Cole Porter,
mm-hmm.
And then look at some of the albums by Frank Sinatra, by Tony Bennett, by Mel Torme.
Oh, yes, definitely.
These are all now considered, and maybe they were then, maybe I just didn't know, jazz artists. And I love this music.
Well, the thing about it, Dave, was that so many of the standards of that time, and you mentioned, the writer of the songs, those were popular songs, and they were contemporary popular songs. And now they have become, many of them, most of them have become jazz classics.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way that you can hear many of those songs. And as I say, it's great to have a song where you can stay with the melody and understand the lyrics. I'm a bit partial in that I have a character flaw. With music, I only like jazz, so that's a failure, I think, on my part.
But I hear you, but I'm pleased to know that it's not just me. So I'm really the... what people think of as jazz, what's considered jazz, it has morphed a little bit the past generation or two.
Yeah, with and Pittsburgh has such a history of jazz and the great jazz artists that came from Pittsburgh, Billy Eckstein. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many of your artists know Billy Eckstein, but Lena Horne had a background in Pittsburgh. A gal from East Liberty, Mary Lou Williams. These were early jazz artists, and then Errol Garner.
Pittsburgh native too, I think, right?
Yes.
Errol Garner? Yeah. And Billy Strayhorn, who...
Westinghouse High School.
Westinghouse, yeah.
That was a
Billy Strayhorn, who wrote some beautiful songs, had... he was a, excuse me, arranger for Duke Ellington, mm-hmm. but he wrote and played some really beautiful songs.
He was another Westinghouse High.
Back in that era, because Pittsburgh had such a rich tradition and so many native sons and daughters, all the big names in jazz came to Pittsburgh to play the clubs.
There were, I was reading not long ago, on the Hill District, there was something like 15 clubs on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And they attracted all of the big names that in the world of jazz. And we had some other clubs coming along later. Shadyside had several jazz clubs. There was one at the Tender Trap. It was so dark in there you couldn't see. but it was so romantic, and they played beautiful, beautiful jazz. And the Melody-Go-Round downtown Pittsburgh. So there have been clubs, but unfortunately so many of them have closed.
Yeah, by the board.
Give Manchester Craftsman's Guild a lot of credit with Bill Strickland and Marty Ashby. They bring in big name jazz artists, and so they're helped carry the flag for jazz.
And Duquesne University with Mike Tamaro.
Yeah, another good source of jazz that are helping, but we just kind of pitched in. We do a couple of we get some jazz artists that we have recommended for the Pennsylvania Conservancy at their Falling Water Twilight tour, and we have recommended some jazz musicians to them, and we do our own Jazz in the Meadow up in Somerset County, and we kind of had to limit that to jazz lovers because it's all free. Mm-hmm. So
hopefully that's in the summertime.
Yes, that is in the summertime.
Yeah. We need to take a quick break. We're going to talk a little bit more with our guests. It's great to have them here, Helen and Brooks Bartlett, and we'll give you the details again on how you can hear some live jazz and kind of like, you know, go back into the past, be in the atmosphere of an old jazz club at Conley Resort later this month. Okay, quick break and then back to talk more with our guests here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after this.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 13-1-3. The pick 3 is 0-6-7. The pick 4, 1-2-4-9. The pick 5, 0-5-6-5-6. The wild ball for each of those is 9. The treasure hunt is 4, 5, 10, 11, and 14. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
Enjoy a night of theater, dessert, and romance at Connecting to Tomorrow's performance of the play Love Letters. Directed by Jerry Johnston and starring Nedra and Dennis Casey, it's a story of two lovers and 50 years of nostalgia, missed opportunities, and deep closeness. Shows on Saturday, February 17th, 7 p.m., and Sunday, the 18th at 3 p.m. at St. Andrew's United Presbyterian Church in downtown Butler. Tickets at connecting2tomorrow.org or visit May's Music Shop, and tickets at the door as well.
I know your pet is much more than just a pet. Your pet is truly a member of your family, one of you. So when the time comes, when it's time to say goodbye, your pet, that family member, deserves respectful care. If you choose pet cremation, which so many have, consider the impeccable, sensitive, local service that's provided by Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. We'll make this pledge. Your pet will be cremated individually in our impeccable facility here in Butler. We assure you that the cremains are assuredly your pets and your pets alone. Before you make your decision, ask how others do it. Individual cremation? Maybe not. Bring your pet to us or we'll come to your home. So when the time comes, tell your veterinarian that you prefer Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. He's a pet parent too. Call us, 724-287-3707, 287-3707. Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. Thank you.
Welcome back, folks. And sure is nice to have a couple of guests with us here in the studio, Brooks and Helen Bartlett. Filling us in on the, first of all, the continuing jazz cabaret to benefit the St. Barnabas Free Care Fund, but in particular, the change in venue for a while. Going to be at Conley Resort Wednesday, February 28th. Chance to hear the Donna Bailey trio. So obviously, I'm talking, Helen Brooks, with the jazz aficionados here. Going back forever, Brooks, maybe?
I started hearing, I'm from West Virginia, and obviously you couldn't hear much jazz, and this goes back to the 40s. Mm-hmm. But I first heard what somebody told me was jazz in 1944. I heard Stan Kenton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was called progressive jazz at that time. But that's when I first got something that was identified as jazz. And so then through radio, I had a little radio set that I put a 50-yard antenna on, and I used to dial around the country to listen to jazz stations at night. And so my interest just grew and grew. And when I came to Pittsburgh for graduate school, I thought it was Nirvana because there was all kind of jazz on the radio then.
What about you, Helen? Jazz aficionado all your life?
No, more popular music, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Show tunes, things like the Broadway shows.
So you're a jazz fan by marriage.
By marriage. That's part of the vows.
Part of the vows.
I love it.
And,
by the way,
it's been good. It's been a good thing.
Oh, yeah. It's great music. Both of our guests, listeners, you're both retired physical therapists.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where was your practice, Brooks?
I was at West Bend Hospital for many years, and then I left there and opened my own practice for my last 20 years. And that was very, very satisfying. I loved working with patients.
Mm-hmm.
That was a joy to be able to talk with them. And that was before the pressures of the present medicine, the practice of working on a computer while you're supposed to be talking to a patient. So I was there in the golden years of medicine.
What about you, Helen?
I started out we went to the Watson School of Physical Therapy, and I stayed on and was on a staff PT as well as a member of the faculty at the PT school.
So you were at the D.T. Watson facility then?
Mm-hmm.
Did you, because there were a lot of victims of polio who
Definitely.
Went there. Did you work with them mm-hmm. in physical therapy?
I think in 60, we saw probably some of the last of the patients who hadn't taken advantage for one reason or another mm-hmm. of the vaccine. And that
By the
was,
way, is D.T. Watson still around, or is that... That's
yes.
Gone. It is still
yes.
around?
It has changed from what started out as a home for crippled girls because Mr. and Mrs. Watson were upset that there were all these places for boys and there was nothing for girls. So they started the D.T. Watson Home for Crippled Girls. And
pioneers. Oh. What a great foresight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, no, that was... Those were times when you were still seeing people that had gotten the vaccine.
Hmm.
So, but then it's when polio fortunately was eradicated, then we were starting working with cerebral palsy patients, etc., and the whole population changed.
Well, I know that you both of you have been great volunteers for St. Barnabas down through the years, and Here's a great opportunity, folks, to, hey, yeah, you're going to be helping the St. Barnabas Free Care Fund, but, I mean, it's not like you're doing penance here, wearing a, wearing a hair shirt. This is a great opportunity to enjoy jazz. And not only that, I just love the idea that you came up with, Brooks, about trying to recreate the atmosphere of the old jazz club. I think that's terrific.
Well, it it has all the ambience of the old jazz club. And jazz artists we have promote that. We have some great, we have a guy coming in May 9th, a cabaret singer of note named Dane Van Adder, and so he'll be